Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And I'm hoping you're getting your dose of content, because it's all about content here. It is not about entertainment, you know, telling you, using shock value, talking about news, giving you sound bites about the news, and, you know, getting you all upset with what the Biden administration is doing or what the Trump administration is doing. What we need to do, and what we try to do here, is we actually try to place constitutional context to everything. What's in the news, and so forth. And so, what we're going to do, because things present themselves so well, because of, you know, where we live, where we still have some form of freedom of expression, right? And so, don't forget that debt is fraud. Now, you're welcome to create your own prayer circle. If you do, just let us know. We'll put it up with the Loudoun Liberty prayer circle. We're inviting people to do this, and we believe that we believe in the power of prayer. We definitely have a firm conviction that the power of prayer works. And so, by all means, if you're inclined, start using your ammo. So anyway, your election begins now. If you are absolutely fed up and you want to start creating a movement in your county, because that's what it's going to take, if you want to guarantee your seat in the next commissioner's, you know, election and actually win that election, the best way to do it without having to play the game of being bought and sold as a politician, because that is the standard. I see it all the time. You either play the game and you get bought and sold because you only have a couple of months to run your campaign. But instead, by using petitions and using the Constitution, you can begin your campaign now. Hopefully we're connecting the dots for you. Now, there's plenty to cover, but one of the things that I think is paramount, because every Friday and every Monday we try to dedicate towards helping cast a light on what a constitutional president can do. And the incoming commander-in-chief had, interestingly enough, provided enough content for us that actually requires us to dive into some historical content for you. Because Trump's Christmas message actually helps us, like I said, this is a segue into some content, because what we're going to actually do is we're going to dive into Monroe Doctrine today. And this gives us further evidence that the constitutional illiteracy is killing us. And if you really think about this, because we actually have people in the Oval Office, whether that was Biden, it doesn't matter who's in the Oval Office. If they don't understand the Constitution, they're killing us, and they can actually send us into an inappropriate war. And due to our failing in the management of foreign relations for over a century, almost two centuries, when you really think about it, how we started going down this path. Now, technically, with Monroe had it right. Monroe did a lot of things that were bad. Not a lot of things. Monroe did a few things that were bad, but he did a lot of things that were right. And we'll talk about that in the Monroe Doctrine, because we're going to scrutinize Monroe today. We're going to scrutinize Trump too. But what we want to do is we'll set the stage with what Trump said, because I know you're all really aware of this, but it merits talking about. Because what could be the fallout of this? What could actually happen? And I'll, you know, let your imagination run wild. But this is one of the things he said. Apparently he said, "Merry Christmas to all, including to the wonderful soldiers of China who are lovingly but illegally operating the Panama Canal. Where we lost 38,000 people in its building 110 years ago, always making certain that the United States puts in billions of dollars in repair money, but will have no absolutely nothing to say about anything. Also to Governor Justin Trudeau of Canada, whose citizens' taxes are far too high, but if Canada was to become our 51st state, their taxes would be cut by more than 60%. Now, that's interesting. Now, see, that's interesting because he's actually playing this game now. And so he should be playing the same game with Panama. He should be playing the same game with every nation in the Western Hemisphere. We'll dive into this because he actually has either been listening. Some of his advisors have heard me because I've said this since well before the 2017 when he got inaugurated. Well before that. And so very few people look at the Constitution as God's plan of global governance. But in the right hands, it can actually bring prosperity and liberty. In the wrong hands, it can actually create a tyrannical government over the world. We actually have to get America back into the framework of the Constitution before we properly can bring other nations into this. We can't take this wad of tyranny and then start adjoining nations to it. That would be wrong, and that would actually create a harder and bigger mess, because these states that would be joining the Union would be joining it under a bunch of false pretenses, because they'd be looking at the Union in its unconstitutional context, believing that there's something in it for them, there's this welfare for them instead of their own sovereignty. He also went down this other path of, actually, let me undo this. And he went into this other part of the left lunatics. This was apparently page 2. And I think this is on his Twitter feed, which I don't necessarily get, but there's plenty of people that forwarded this to me. And so he says, Merry Christmas to the radical left lunatics who are constantly trying to obstruct our court system and our elections and are always going after the great citizens and patriots of the United States. But in particular, their political opponent, me, always the victim, huh? They know that their only chance of survival is getting pardons from a man who absolutely has no idea to what he's doing. And so on and on and on, he talks about, Sleepy Joe and some slinging insults and so forth. But the real question is, and we already covered this, folks, you need to go back to what we covered in our previous shows. And we actually kind of give you the encapsulation of those as we discuss these. So let me give that encapsulation now. On the 15th of November, we covered the invasion. On the 18th of November, we covered the currency and this facade of going into a digital currency. We also covered the full removal of the UN and all subjugation to international treaties like that, where we subjugate ourselves to foreign law. We also covered the immediate appeal to the states. This is something big that Trump has to do. He's got to actually make these appeals to the states to get them to actually take over in holding government accountable. Now, I'm going to stop right there. I want you to understand this whole concept of holding public servants accountable. Trump does not want to be held accountable. He wants to be unfettered to be able to do what he wants to do. And people will always do those things that serve them. A public servant is a person that goes in and does their job and serves their people, not by actually feeding them and doing things that they have no authority to do, but safeguarding their liberties by staying within the confines of the Constitution. This is what made America great. And every time somebody, for the right reason or the wrong reason, it doesn't matter, it was always with the best intentions, they always did something that was a violation of the Constitution, which actually became an abuse later. Because even though the conservatives may have done something good, like created the Child's Health Board to save lives of the children, now look at it today. Death panels are being formed, or I should say, insurances are making decisions to say, we don't really care. There's no money in saving you, so we're just going to give you this comfort. We're going to, you know, we deny you the ability to have these narcotics throughout your life, but we're going to give them to you to put you in a stupor so that you don't mind dying at our hand. I mean, the paradoxes that we're actually feeding ourselves here is just amazing. But anyway, let me move on. So the next, on November 29th, is when we talked about the lockdown of the Department of Justice, taking away everything that it is doing except for constitutional compliance. If this became the committee, the National Committee of Constitutional Compliance, like we're doing at the county level, going back to holding everybody accountable, then now we actually are going to start cleaning up government. And this is why this county or this committee needs to go after Congress first. It needs to go after the renegades of Congress, those who willfully and materially violated the Constitution, those people who had their hand in Obamacare, those people who were literally setting the stage for this tyranny, setting the stage for the pandemic. All of those people throughout government, gone. Those people who didn't know any better, they just did because this is how it's always been done and didn't understand, you know, that they were swearing to support the corporation. You know, the British corporation, all of those treaties, the Organic Act, all of that gone. That was the first subjugation to a foreign nation that they had no authority to do. Trump could actually go down this path of saying, we're not going to abide by those anymore. Oh, watch the world put the sights on us, right? Laser beams all over the place. So anyway, as he locks this down, this is where he can actually start going into states and removing everybody in the state courts, everybody in the state governments who are doing those evils of not supporting the Constitution, who are trying to bend the law, who are trying to manufacture law. I want you to understand that when we look at the court system and lawyers are designed to try to soak law, to bend it, to try to create new law out of existing law, or actually try to create new law out of the vapors of air. So we have to start actually holding these people accountable. They don't have that power. In my next article, which hopefully will be released sometime soon in the new year, this new article will actually dive into, you know, common law and what it means to the United States and how our entire court system and how our justice system has been completely corrupted. You know, you want to make people smart. You want to get Trump smart. Have them read my articles. I'm sure that there's a lot, because I cite a lot of other people's articles and information in there. Bob Schultz is one of them. God bless Bob Schultz for everything he's been doing since the 1980s. This guy is a godfather in the patriot movement of standing in the face of tyranny and basically demanding accountability. Now, moving on the 2nd of December, we actually covered the retraction of staffing the offices of the Department of Interior and these other vestiges of enforcement that are actually operating in the states. The states need to stand up against this. The states need to literally defend themselves against these agencies that have no business in existing in their states. There's no constitutional standing for them to be there. This is about self-preservation. And Trump needs to actually create this symbiotic relationship between the executive branch and the states, the state legislatures, in cleaning this up. The state sovereignty and the ability to sell land or any form of resource to a foreign entity. We covered that on December 6th. Now, we already heard that up in Michigan, there was a, this was in the news, that a Michigan town basically fired everybody, literally re-elected or elected all new people and got rid of them and actually changed the locks on all the public buildings so that nobody could get in there because they were basically selling the town out to create a Chinese battery factory. It's nice that we see these things happening, that we're standing up to this, but we need to take the constitutional stand that that deed, that land transaction, for them to actually buy and be able to do that was fraudulent. There is no authority in the Constitution for the federal government to even allow that. It is their job to protect the sovereignty of the states. And for a foreign nation to be able to come into America and to be able to own property as well as conduct business and so forth to suit them, I am sorry, folks. You may be able to do that in every nation in the world, but our Constitution does not allow that to happen here. It would require an amendment, and thank God there's never been an amendment to do that. Because what I'm saying is we have all of the standing and we have all of the constitutional power behind us in enforcing this protection of our sovereignty. As we start getting rid of the leftist under the Trump administration, if he understands the power of the Constitution, he could literally become a different name than he thinks he will be going in the annals of history. Not just the 45th and the 47th. He will actually be a reframer. He could actually lead in the restoring of this republic. Will he? Well, we got 4 years for him to prove this. And, you know, I don't see it. But that doesn't mean I'm going to shut up. That doesn't mean I'm going to just bite my tongue and not talk about these things. Because it's one thing to say I'm going to make America great. That's just lipstick on a pig as far as I'm concerned. So the next thing we covered, let me move on because I want to encapsulate all of these. On the 9th, we talked about restoring impost taxes and the disbanding of all foreign holdings in America, as well as the same thing as giving foreign aid. There is no power within the United States to actually take taxes, place taxes upon the people, the imposts and so forth, to be able to use that to give to other countries, to help them, because we're a benevolent nation. There's no benevolence within the Constitution. None. Then on the 13th, the 16th, the 20th, and on the 23rd, on Monday, we actually covered the reconstituting of our national security system. And what a great segue, because we talked about what it takes to do that. So for today, the next step is the foreign affairs regarding our hemisphere. In other words, the recovering of the Monroe Doctrine and actually shaping our foreign policies in that direction. Now, going back to what Trump said, my kudos to Trump on making a comment that Canada should be maybe the 51st state. But he doesn't understand the nuances behind this. First off, the territories that are in the queue need to be addressed. Puerto Rico has been in the queue. You can't just be a perpetual territory. Puerto Rico, and actually, when we go through the Monroe Doctrine, you'll actually notice that Monroe actually talks about Puerto Rico and being involved in protecting Puerto Rico. So we've had a long and rich history in basically being kind of a protector of them. We need to let them go. We need to let Puerto Rico go and let anybody that has been here, and you know, whether they're a citizen or not, those are all mistakes. Because bottom line, when Puerto Rico had basically decided not to, because the transition of a state, and Congress has made some real mistakes, but it's Congress's mistakes, they've got to own it. And so we may have to live with the consequences because this is a part of the admission. The admission of a new state into the union is ambiguous, unfortunately. The states need to fix this. And there's actually a conversation that we probably need to have of, do we need the Senate, or do we actually just need the state legislatures more electronically engaged in the Senate? Because if you understand, it is the suffrage of the state legislatures who is to be represented in that Senate. These guys are, the people who become senators are just those who, you know, vote this way or that way based on the state legislature. And so when you really start thinking about it, do we need a Senate anymore now that we have the level of technology? I say we still do, but I'm not sure having two plays anything more. And as a matter of fact, I think that, you know, the one would be sufficient. We could downsize the Senate from 50 to 1. It would still have equal suffrage, right? Delaware would have their one. California would have their one. There would, and this would actually be, they would, this would be disbanding the 17th Amendment, by the way. But what would happen is that anything and everything that they have to formally vote or create a bill or vote on a bill or what have you, the message or the guidance would come from the state legislature. And if the senator did not vote or do their bidding, then that senator is to be removed. That is a requirement under Article 5, not under Article 1 and the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment only changes the process. We've covered this several times. It only changes the process of how a senator is seated. It does not change the responsibility of offering and being the suffrage, the equal suffrage for the state legislature. Read Article 5, and it says that no state legislature shall lose its equal suffrage in the Senate without their consent. They've never consented to losing that. Therefore, they still have the power to demand either you represent our suffrage, and today there's no hiding it. Back in the old days, you know, it was just so confusing and they just didn't have these communications. They couldn't see their every move like we can today. There's no reason why we have this monstrosity we call the Senate and all of the powers that they think they wield. And I believe we that by going back down this path of reclaiming the sovereignty of the states and their suffrage in that Senate, that the state legislatures would actually have, boy, that would be that would shake the earth, or I should say the earth underneath the globalist feet, in recognizing that the Constitution is absolute, and it is, they've basically failed to understand the design and the beauty of this Constitution, and their illiteracy has screwed them once again. Because we get screwed by our own illiteracy, but even the globalists did not understand. And this is why everything is in his hands. Everything is in his hands. And this is how we can use the Constitution in taking back this republic. And we're just trying to put all of this on the table for Trump. Now, let's dive into, because I kind of covered the message, let's dive into Monroe Doctrine. Now, this Monroe Doctrine was delivered in Monroe's final message, basically, or actually it wasn't his final message. I think he gave a report in 2024. He provided an inaugural address in 2024. Not an inaugural. The annual State of the Union. My bad. This was a State of the Union address in 2023. Remember, Monroe was elected in 1816 and took office, was sworn in March 1817. So when I mentioned, and I was wrong just the other day, yesterday, I think, in talking about Monroe, I was wrong when I said that it was 1816 in his first inaugural address. It was his 1816 campaign inaugural address, but it was actually in 1817, or was it? I have to go look at what, actually, I think his inaugural address was in March. It wasn't in January. But whatever. The inaugural address is when he comes into office, and then the State of the Union is stated kind of like before Congress leaves in December. Now we do it in January. and it is actually either a State of the Union or an inauguration. But back then they had an inauguration and a State of the Union. So we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I apologize for apologizing, but I always want to be the one to apologize for misspeaking, because I do it all the time. Holding, and it's not, I don't want to use the words it's complicated. It's not. It's just different. The way they functioned back there before the, what is it, the 20th Amendment, and, you know, because they started changing the protocol. They started changing when the inaugurations occurred and so forth. So back in those days, they actually had State of the Union. So the first president didn't wait a whole year and only addressed the nation once or twice, you know, or once like they do today. They actually addressed the nation twice. And so they had the inauguration address and then the State of the Union. But today they don't do both. In other words, the president only addresses the nation once, but in the election year, the seating of a new president, he actually addresses the nation twice. Okay, so anyway, that's where I got a little confused. Or I allowed the lapse of understanding of what, you know, he was elected in 1816, and I talked about his inaugural address as the 1817. Or actually, I mentioned it as 1816, and it was actually in 1817. Anyway, let me get back into the Monroe thing. I don't want to spend too much time apologizing. But the Monroe Doctrine was declared in only a few paragraphs of his seventh annual message to Congress, in his basically State of the Union address. And this was on December 2nd, 1823. Monroe warned European countries not to interfere in the Western Hemisphere. I believe that this is for all the world. The Monroe Doctrine, and Trump can actually revisit this and actually say, hey, this Monroe Doctrine still is a part of our construction. We still have this concern over any nation from Europe or Asia or any other hemisphere and their conduct in our hemisphere. It is repugnant to us to see these foreign nations such as China, Russia, and any other nation that is trying to be manipulating of nations in this quadrant. Now, here's our problem. The fact is, when we look at how many nations in the Western Hemisphere, we fail to nurture them, and we fail to actually incorporate them into our republic. The reason we're having all of the problems and the reason some of these nations are suffering is because we allowed autonomy. We took a stand and said, you suffer and we'll just play with the regimes and we'll be involved in manipulating the world instead of incorporating the world into liberty. That was the globalist plan. The globalist plan, the godless plan, was to be manipulative so that lots of people would die, so that people could really become very rich. They expanded wealth, not for all, but for the few. Even though there were many outliers of people that were able to rise up But they created a condition of specific, I'll just say families and or people that could actually enter into the new form of royalty, which the new form of royalty was corporations instead of true bloodlines that went back centuries and centuries and centuries, even though some of these were actually evil bloodlines. Like, look at the Gates. There's plenty of bloodlines out there that have, you know, maintained these corporations. And I know I'm going to get a barrage of emails regarding families that are involved in corporations, Rockefellers and so forth, that actually have ties back to the old evil bloodlines. Okay. This isn't about spending all of the time going through the Wiccans. It's about laying out the facts through the content in our source documents that our forefathers, the framers, actually gave us so that we could see where we're going wrong today and how to right our course and ship, period. I don't want to get into, I don't run away from talking about those types of things, but I don't want to waste your time. Time is too finite. Time is too short. We don't have the luxury of time to go into understanding who begot who and all of that. Have you ever read the Bible, the very beginning of who begot, who begot, who begot, and why that was important? Okay, it's important to take that record, but understanding that Christ is our Savior today, that's what's really important, okay? So, and there's all sorts of other things that are important. And saving this nation by using the Constitution and restoring the Constitution as a governing guide for all of humanity. The Constitution was not just written for us, folks. I'm sorry. The framers were short-minded when they thought it was only written for those few people that lived at that point in time. They didn't see the world becoming what it is today. Only God knew these things. So anyway, let me get back to this little prep, and I'm going to dive into this. So Monroe warned European nations not to interfere, right? Quote, that the American continents, are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any European powers. The Monroe Doctrine became a cornerstone of future U.S. foreign policy. And then as we started becoming manipulators of the world, we basically avoided this. And we turned our back on the Constitution and our responsibility of nurturing nations to become a state in this union. Now, some things need to be put on a fast track, like the splitting up of states and those types of things. But we'll dive into that many, many shows down. Because bottom line, when we start looking at the United States and when we start looking at bringing in nations, we're going to be bringing in a lot of different nations, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a very slow transition, like Canada. Canada could not just become a state in the Union. They speak English, which is a big favor. And so Puerto Rico, the thing that Puerto Rico still needs to do is they have to have well over 50%. I think the threshold should be 80. I believe the threshold of speaking English should be 80%. That when you go into Puerto Rico, you should not have to speak Spanish. The business is conducted in English. Law is conducted in English. Everything, the business, legal, and all of that, English, period. When you become a state in the Union. This is one of the things that will take a generation possibly to get there. And so I believe we need to let Puerto Rico go, and then on their own, they can start, you know, doing what's necessary. Then they can reapply. Canada, they could get there too if they wanted to. They need to vote to say we want to become a territory and transition into a state. The people have to do this. And Trump just can't, you know, be the king and say that, you know, maybe they'll become our 51st state. There's a process. And I know that he's just poking and he's stirring the pot. I get it. But he's speaking to something that is very near and dear to the Constitution and to my heart. So let's dive into this Monroe Doctrine. one of the things that Monroe actually talked about through this one address to Congress, to the Union, he spoke about the needs of the militia. And so I'm going to post this on the source document page. And I kind of have some subtitles throughout the document to let you know what he's talking about here and talking about here and so forth. And there are certain things that are highlighted. And so the yellow highlights with the red is where he talks about the militia. The yellow highlights with black font is the Monroe Doctrine. And then there's some blue highlights that talk about where he spoke of the need for an amendment for the Department of Transportation. We haven't even covered the vetoes of the Department of Transportation yet. That's something we haven't covered yet. But we want you to understand that clearly they can't do anything if it is not within their powers. And so Monroe vetoed in 1822. He vetoed the ability for Congress to create these footings for the Department of Transportation. And so a year later, he basically pokes Congress and says, hey, you know, we tried to act, we need to do this, and we need an amendment. And then what he does is he basically asks the people if they're okay with executive expenditures, in other words, doing the wrong thing. Then he'll do these things that the nation really needs. But they need an amendment. He really advocated for an amendment. I'll read this and you'll actually hear what he says. The dark blue with the yellow text is the points where he actually speaks about the success of shutting down the slave trade. Unfortunately, he does not address, you know, the fact that he went down this path of growing slavery in the Union by inflicting it in admitting new states into the Union. That was unconstitutional, and that was a doctrine of Monroe, or I should say it was a the Missouri Compromise was a document that came out of Congress. And so it wasn't necessarily a law. This is basically, Congress felt that it was underneath Article 4, Section 3, admitting states into the Union. They perverted the Constitution. In other words, they took it upon themselves to say, we can just do this, and they didn't actually go to Monroe. What Monroe could have done and what Monroe should have done is different. He actually should have went in and said, you can't do that. And he should have actually arrested every member of Congress. But unfortunately, they didn't have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment then. And I've yet to go through all of the annals of Monroe, and I just don't have the time to go through where Monroe may have communicated back to Congress saying, you shouldn't be doing this. I'd love to see that, because I'd actually like to exonerate the man, because I think he was a decent president, except for that one thing that happened on his watch. It forced us to actually have to suffer as a nation, and it put us in a position where we were vulnerable to Britain and being overtaken politically by Britain because of the Civil War. So anyway, and it had nothing to do with the 14th Amendment, folks. The 14th Amendment, there's no boogeyman there. The overtaking of us actually happened after the 14th Amendment. So let me dive into this Monroe Doctrine. Now, this is a long, let me see, it is 12 pages. So this was a long address. And so I would imagine him standing up and reading this probably took him over an hour, possibly. But anyway, let me dive into the setup, because at the very beginning, the first title you're going to come across is here President Monroe sets up justification for his forthcoming doctrine, okay? And he says this, that the commissioners under the fifth article of the Treaty of Ghent, having disagreed in their opinions respecting that portion of the boundary between the territories of the United States and of Great Britain, the establishment of which had been submitted to them, have made their respective reports in compliance with that article, that the same might be referred to the decision of a friendly power. It being manifest, however, that it would be difficult, if not impossible, for any power to perform that office without great delay and much inconvenience to itself, a proposal has been made by this government to accede to that, to by that of Great Britain, to endeavor to establish that boundary of amicable negotiation. So, again, even though the Treaty of Ghent, and we actually got Britain out of our hair, that didn't mean that they weren't still there. And as a matter of fact, over a period of time, circumstances were what they were, where we ended up buying more and more property that would actually create the rest of the United States from Britain. Because the Pacific Northwest at this point in time was owned by Britain. From, I believe, Montana, all of that part west from the Louisiana in the Northwest was Britain, and into the Southwest was Spain. So these two European nations were really perceived as a true threat to what we needed to nurture and for what was coming around the corner, because I believe the Monroe Doctrine laid out the call of manifest destiny. Because as we started realizing that even though we had a problem with having enough people out there to actually, you know, stand the line against Britain, Britain had the same problem. And as a matter of fact, Britain couldn't afford to try to conduct a third war all the way across on the western side of North America. I mean, look at where Britain is. Access to the East Coast was easy. Access to the Pacific Coast, I mean, they had to circumvent the whole globe to get to the West Coast. That took a lot of time, folks. They didn't have airplanes. They didn't want to go across the Arctic. They didn't want to have to go across the continent of Europe and Asia to get over there. Getting there, because they didn't have a canal, right? They had to go around the Cape of Hope or whatever, the South African Cape. And they had to go all the way in between Australia and Asia and get all the way across the Pacific to the United States. This was a real quagmire for Britain, but they weren't going to just easily let up. And so over time, they ended up actually selling out. But this is what he basically said. This is the second paragraph of his comment in setting up this need for the Monroe Doctrine. It appearing from long experience that no satisfactory arrangement could be formed of the commercial intercourse between the United States and the British colonies in this hemisphere by legislative acts, while each party pursued its own course without agreement or concert with the other. A proposal has been made to the British government to regulate this commerce by treaty, as it has been to arrange in like manner that the just claim of the citizens of the United States inhabiting the states and territories bordering of the lakes and rivers which empty into the St. Lawrence, to the navigation of that river to the ocean, for these and other objects of high importance to the interest of both parties, a negotiation has been opened with the British government, which it is hoped will be a satisfactory result. So they were trying to work these things out. Now, of course, Canada is not what you'd consider an easy circumventing or navigating across Canada by foot or what have you. So the Pacific Northwest, getting all the way out to the Pacific, you got to realize, folks, that continental divide kicked a lot of people's butt. And the Pacific Northwest was literally another world. And it took a lot of effort I don't believe that there was any traversing of artillery or anything like that coming from the east to the west. They had to take it the long way to get it into the Puget Sound, up into the Victoria and those places, that, you know, ended up changing their names as we actually bought it out. Now, one of the things that I want to take a second to reflect on, as we look at America, unlike the other colonies, or I should say the other colonizations of America, when we look at you know, Colombia, we look at Venezuela, we look at these Latin American nations and even Mexico and the savagery of the Spaniards and the Portuguese and how they treated the inhabitants in the naming conventions and so forth. It was not nearly as cooperative and mutually, tragically, we had too many abuses back and forth. And even though we weren't necessarily the very first instigator, the many times we did instigate first, right, wrong, or indifferent, the past, it has to become the past. And as long as we're not willing to let the past be what it is and all mutually agree that liberty for all is important, and how can we give that? How can we give that? And when we understand our laws and our rule of law and so forth, then we actually have to come up with what would be agreeable, because any other nation that would have taken over, there's no nation that is getting poked in the eye like Mexico and Spain. Where is the poking of the eye of what happened from Spain and what they did to Mexico with the indigenous people? Same thing throughout South America. I mean, not nearly as the center stage that America is with the Indians or the different tribes of the indigenous people. So when we look at what we need to do to move forward, the 14th Amendment took care of that. The 14th Amendment made them citizens. Whether they liked it or not, they became citizens of the United States. Now, they can actually denounce their citizenship, but then they have no protections. And then they would become, if they became hostile, they would be enemies of the Constitution. So it is in everybody's, I guess, interest to support individual liberty and individual sovereignty. The concept of having a religious or a cultural theocracy, of being able to control land just to maintain that culture and theocracy, that can't fly within a state anymore. It can't fly. And so it doesn't mean that they're necessarily wrong. They just can't inflict that, and they can't actually operate that while a state is sovereign over itself. So the new world and the old world has to figure out how to get along. And I think that the best way is to give that territory, give the territories that were set aside under these reservation treaties, that land becomes theirs. But that becomes another long discussion. I got 5 minutes and we're going through the Monroe Doctrine. So obviously we're going to have to cover this. I knew this was going to take at least two more shows to go. So let me get into the doctrine. The first part of the doctrine, at this proposal, and this actually occurs on page 3, at the proposal of the Russian imperial government, made through the minister of the emperor residing here, a full power and instructions has been transmitted to the minister of the United States of St. Petersburg to arrange an amicable negotiation, the respective rights and interests of the two nations of the northwest coast of this continent. Because Russia kind of was controlling most of that up there. We all know that. A similar proposal had been made by His Imperial Majesty to the government of Great Britain. In other words, Russia was actually speaking of interest for the Pacific Northwest, which has likewise been acceded to. The government of the United States has been desirous by this friendly proceeding of manifesting the great value which they have had invariably attached to the friendship of the emperor and their solicitude to cultivate the best understanding with this, with his government. In the decision or in the discussions to which this interest has given rise, and in the arrangements by which they may terminate the occasion, has been judged proper for asserting as a principle in which the rights and interests of the United States are involved, that the American continents, by the free and independent condition which they have assumed and maintained, are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any European powers. Now, Russia was a European power, even though they spanned into Asia. Now, The next part is highlighted because this is where he actually starts talking about the slave trade before he gets back into the doctrine of and more justification, setting up the doctrine. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives adopted at their last session, instructions have been given to all ministers of the United States accredited to the powers of Europe and America to propose the proscription of the African slave trade by classing it under the denomination and inflicting on its perpetrators the punishment of piracy. Should this proposal be acceded to, it is not doubted that this odious and criminal practice will be promptly and entirely suppressed. It is earnestly hoped that it will accede to from the firm belief that it is the most effectual expedient that can be adopted for the purpose. Now, Britain opposed this. We were leading, folks, if anybody in history teaches anything other than the fact that we were leading in shutting down the slave trade, what was the origins of this to even happen? The Constitution. The Constitution demanded it in 1808 that the slave trade be shut down. And in 1808, as a matter of fact, during the Constitutional Convention, I've got to give you this now, in the 1808 Constitutional Convention, when they entered the 20-year delay of shutting down the slave trade, Madison, you know, basically displayed his umbrage towards that clause. And he actually irreverently stated, who in the heck is going to remember, buried in the Constitution in this obscure section, in Article 1, Section 9, that there's this demand for the shutting down of the slave trade in 20 years? Who's going to remember that in 20 years? He was pointing out that that could easily be ignored. And as a matter of fact, during the ratification debates, the South was depending on that. Even though slave and the slave trade and slavery and abolition became a real festering sore in America, it was the providence of the divine hand, or I should say the wisdom and providence of our Creator, who basically ensured who was going to become president in 1808 to make sure the execution of shutting down the slave trade would occur. That is why Madison became that president in 1808. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that with Madison and Jefferson, it was done. It had actually happened on Jefferson's watch. But Madison made sure that those resources were set up and retained. He was the Secretary of State to make that happen under Jefferson. And as the president, he made sure that Monroe did the same. And this is where they were setting up this concept of repatriating Africans back to Africa. They took taxpayer dollars to do this, to basically repatriate Africans back to South or back to Africa by buying this land called Liberia. We bought land on the west coast of Africa. This land was used to actually help repatriate. It basically created the nation of Liberia, which then set up the capital of Monrovia to name after Monroe. This was the origins of this was Thomas Jefferson and was actualized under Madison and actually executed under Monroe. Folks, I'm just here to tell you that when we go through these founding documents, we can start actually seeing the real truth. You know, America, racism was begotten by slavery, but we were not a racist nation. I'm G.R. Mobley, reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And sorry for the bleed in, but I got a little tongue-tied. There's just so much to cover, and I hope you forgive me. And going into the new year, we got to keep covering this content. God bless.
Only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.